I'm Don DeLaurentiis.
I'm Dee Dee Janay.
I'm Magnum Blonde.
And we're the host of the WrestleCast. You can catch us right here on the CSPN each and every Friday as we provide your pro wrestling commentary with color.
The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mock my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
Hello and welcome to this episode of Comic Book Chronicles. Apparently this is a countdown to Armageddon because I'm seeing on Hangouts, the Hangouts on Air is going away later this year. As soon as I hit live, that's when the message comes. I'll show you afterwards. But it says try youtube.com/webcam, which I hesitate to. Which we knew that, you know, we've known this for quite a while that was a potential thing. Anyway, regardless, we will get to that later on. I am your host, Roddy Cat. And you can find me at Roddy Cat on Twitter and Instagram and all that. News Nerds Need on Twitter. News Nerds Needs Reddit and CB Caps Instagram. And with me tonight is the man, the mellow, the man up in Brooklyn. Brooklyn's finest.
Brooklyn!
Exactly, there we go. Boondocks is coming back, so you know it's all proper. Agent_70 on Twitter, Instagram.
What's up, everybody?
Straight Caesar right up in there. But also not with us tonight, PCN_dirt on Twitter. He is not representing News Nerds Need, sorry. Pop Culture Net on Twitter, popculturenetwork.com, and all the umbrella sites underneath. We don't know when that Vine alternative comes up, but I'm sure we will let you know when that happens. Also, the Osiris of this ish. One, Tim, DOGG98 on Twitter. And speaking of Twitter, I need to minimize that because I'm getting distracted. CB Cron on Twitter, theclicknation.com, and theclicknation on Twitter. That's DKLIQNATION. And of course, Comic Book Resources, where he's over there writing his face off. And you can find this here comic book podcast on Google Play and Apple iTunes. Well, soon to be Apple Podcast, just that. I mean, I'm going to call him Clay. Also, Spotify, you can find us there. And, of course, the Cold Slither Podcast Network's SoundCloud page. This is really not doing my voice actor's my voice actor gig thing, you know, justice. I have no voice actor gig, but wouldn't that be nice? But, yeah. Here we are, folks. Another week of fine comics upon us, and we are going to do as we do every week about this time and start off with the comics of the week. And we're going to start off with what we said to be the event stuff of the week, which would be War of the Realms, starting with Journey into Mystery number 5555.
Right, so this is the longest tie-in miniseries.
That sounds right.
Of War of the Realms, and I've had a few nits to pick with this based on the length of the series. I thought maybe it was a little stretched out, but now we are at the end. We are basically wrapping up all of these tie-in miniseries before War of the Realms 6 comes out, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So we find ourselves following up on the last issue with Lausa in the hands of one Ares, the Greek god of war, and our heroes, the Marvel Babysitters Club, are hot pursuit like Roscoe, yeah, like Roscoe P. Coltrane. And they eventually get into, you know, their basic final confrontation, and not everything is as it seems.
Or is it? So, yeah, so the through line through this book has been that, yeah, they've been running away from Ares, you know, because he was trying to get Lausa for whatever reason, and he was being directed by who he thought was one person who's been doing some stuff in another book, New Agents of Atlas, which that gets addressed in here. But come to find out, it was a swerve of sorts.
Which, just a bit.
Yeah, which was a swerve that I was slightly wrong on, because I thought the person who was... which, actually, I was right and wrong, because the person who was directing him over the radio is not the person... is not the same person who was behind the whole thing, which I was right about. And the person over the radio just so happened to be somebody they met or remet a couple of issues back, and that was the Demon Rider. That they met, like, in, I think that was issue two or three. It was issue three. That's right, because they met Skrulls first, and then they went.
Four.
Either way, it was one of those issues.
One of the middle issues when, yes, apparently they were... what we find out is that, and spoiler alert here for anyone who's still catching up on this, what we find out is that Lausa is manipulating everybody and everything.
Which, again, you seem to come across early on. Like, even if you read the first couple of issues, you kind of get a sense of that.
And what you find is she's been manipulating and kind of nudging people in certain directions.
Right. So basically, and everybody they met in the last few issues was by design from her.
Right. And ultimately is meant to form a bigger babysitters club to defend Lausa against the forces of Malekith and Et Al.
Yes, she's amassing her troops like a good baby demon goddess baby would do.
Right.
So, and they address is like, okay, yeah, she's, you know, her affinity is both demonic and goddess and blah blah blah, and this and that and other comics. So at the end of this all, and also we should point out Ares, who was kind of the one after this, finds out that she was also the one that was pulling him through somebody else, which I kind of figured was the case. It was like, because it was like, okay, Lausa was the one over the radio trying to get Ares to come after him because she wanted him for some reason. I figured that part out, and I was kind of roundabout right. Because you could kind of tell that even last issue, or not last year, it was either last issue or issue three. It was like when he was brought up and, you know, she was kind of making faces or whatever, but she was a baby, she does that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, some of this was kind of telling on itself if you kind of looked at it. But that said, all of this, all this was a big ploy to get her an army, and we see them at the end back at Mother Base, aka Avengers Mountain. You know, I guess for the big push that's going to happen, which is a theme going into a couple of these books, actually, especially right. This week. As we said, the things are wrapping up. So,
right. War of the Realms is actually out next week. So we'll have something juicy to talk about once that gets in our hands. So, yes,
it sticks the landing.
Right. And that is a big hope that it does stick the landing.
Yeah.
It was kind of nice to see Baldur step up as a Norse god, because he'd been kind of, you know, he's been placed into the direct background in a lot of stories that he's been involved in up until very recently, up until this story, really. Right. And it was nice to see him get a little bit of shine. And Roddy Cat made note of one referral to what Baldur does as Simonsonian. And yeah, I giggled at that too. I got a nice laugh at that. I thought that was a nice touch.
Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, you just kind of... And it didn't hurt the fact that, well, it didn't help, but it didn't hurt the fact that it was one Simon Williams Okay. Oh, sure. Saying that, I'm like, really? just point the dart in that direction. Let it go. But I don't think Simon was a Simon's the main thing. But regardless of the name, I don't think Wonder Man was a.
No, Wonder Man existed before.
I know that, but I can't remember who created him. So.
Oh, but he was like in the
like he was early, like early Avengers, I know, but
yeah. Like real early Avengers.
Yeah,
so.
He was like shit 20. Actually, he might have been in the teens when he came about originally. But regardless, it doesn't matter because it's irrelevant to the point right now.
Mm-hmm. So ultimately, they convert Ares to their side, which is hysterical.
Yeah, quite easy at that, you know.
And as we mentioned, they finish the story basically rallying together with the rest of the Earth's forces at Avengers Mountain. Mm-hmm. And we're left to think, oh, okay, so, you know, I guess, you know, as Roddy put it, you know, this is the final push. So, you know, we'll see these characters, at, you know, somewhere in War of the Realms 6 and beyond. You know,
a panel at least.
Right.
Just to say, hey, remember this in case you were right. Reading all of this, you know.
Well, they had to bring Thorey back to Avengers Mountain.
Of
so,
course, yeah.
You know.
Of course.
You know, and bring Miles back in some, you know, somehow, so.
Right. Right, and Kate's in the picture now. And
exactly.
And everybody else in the other books, I'm sure, like I said, everybody will get, like, a panel, if anything. But yeah, I say that I have, especially the last couple of weeks, but I've been saying this a good bit about things being wrapped up nicely and neatly. This is pretty much one of those stories that did.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, all right, well, hey, guess what? We got this. Ares not the thing you're looking for. You know, they mentioned Cinder and the swerve there. And then, hey, Avengers Mountain, push on into 6. Go. Nice and neat. So, we will probably see that with a couple of these books. So, right. We've wrung that one out, and let's get to
the next one. I was just going to add that the reason why I was even, you know, why I had a WTF reaction to this was, like, what was the, you know, not that I'm asking what was the point, because it is comics after all.
And it is also, but there was usually half a point.
But I found myself just reading this kind of groaning. So that was that's a tough reaction to a comic that has been telling a decent story through 5 issues, but then we get to the denouement and we're just like, oh, really?
I kind of get it because it's kind of like, okay, well, the whole thing was basically in service of getting, you know, a part of an army together, which may or may not affect the final battle, but, you know. Especially as big a scope as this event is, so yeah, I get that. But it's right. Also an event tie-in. Half of them are like that. In any
right,
case,
but this isn't a tie-in. What I was going to say is, I think the tie-ins that you characterize as that are more the book tie-ins as opposed to the miniseries tie-ins. When I say that, I mean tie-ins. But I think specifically the mini tie-ins at least have something to do with the main crossover or miniseries, as opposed to the book tie-ins that are at best tangentially.
Right. Yeah, and I agree with you there, but no, I kind of. But I'm saying that in because that is what you just said is absolutely true. But the way some of these minis been going, it kind of still feels just like that. If they had put this in somebody, you know, tied this in somebody's book, it probably would have done the same effect. To me, I don't know. But regardless, speaking of, we probably won't get to them because I don't think either one of us read them. There were a couple of outside tie-in books. That being what Tony Stark Iron Man, because I think he gets there's a new story and he'll get some armor, and Captain Marvel was the other.
I skimmed them.
I didn't. Yeah, I said I was going to check them out at some point, but and I know Squirrel Girl's going on, but that didn't come out this week anyway, so it doesn't matter. So next up, speaking of tie-in books, War of the Realms, Spider-Man, and the League of Realms, which is probably the longest title in this event so far. Mm. Well, not so far. It's almost ending.
Right.
And this is also another one that comes to an end.
Right. I've enjoyed this one because of the premise, which is a team that was initially led by Thor is now being led by Spider-Man. And they're trying to, you know, their main mission was to liberate, I guess, portions of Africa that had been taken over by the Angels of Heaven, but turned into a different quest altogether once they took care of the angels, thanks to a defector angel. And they eventually make their way to Europe to take on some more dark elves. And that's where we find our heroes in this final issue of the limited series.
Right. Which, well, we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, Curse comes into play on this one, which has been kind of in and out of a couple of books.
And I rather like the I rather like how they wrapped up this particular version of Curse.
Yes,
because it was related to, you know, and it was a nice way to tie up that particular storyline with this version of Curse. And spoiler bell again. This version of Curse was once a member of the League of Realms.
Yes, and I did not know that. Did you know this character prior to that, or?
I did, because I remember when this female Curse was created.
Okay.
They actually mention in the book the original Curse, who I knew from the Simonson run when he was originally created, Algrim the Strong. So that's what that, you know, that's how, that's the character that I remembered as Curse. But then very recently, Malekith transformed this particular Dark Elf into a new female version of Curse, and that's who's been running around during War of the Realms.
Right.
So it was nice that they wrapped up her story and they found a way to free her from the curse of the curse.
I mean, yeah.
I'm here all night and every week. So ultimately, this was a pretty satisfying read.
Again, kind of neatly wrapped up. Because again, they end up back at Avengers Mountain, just like, you know, just like.
Well, not quite. I was going to say they end up getting the League of the Realms together to fight, right? And that's where we leave things. What I was going to comment upon, though, was the art, and there's actually two recognizable names on art in this issue, which is great. I'm glad that they gave the art duties on a fairly prominent War of the Realms tie-in book to some regular Marvel artists, Nico Leon, who we know from Ms. Marvel, and Marco Faia, who is not a stranger to us. He's definitely got some good work under his belt. But I thought that Faia's pages were so rushed looking that it took me out and suspended my suspension of disbelief. And it took me out of the story because I was looking at it like, whoa, what happened?
Right.
And then I had to go back to the credits page and look at the art credits, because all of a sudden the art transformed into mush.
Again, which tends to some sadly happen
when deadlines are involved. I know.
So,
you know, they needed to get this out before War of the Realms 6, so they did what they had to.
Right. Again, as to use a pseudo sports term, you hate to see it.
Sure. But, you know, all I have to say is, you know, I appreciated the story. It had a nice. It was a nice, well told story. For a tie-in miniseries, and it treated the characters that we had seen in the pages of Thor well. You know, it was nice to see them continue to get some shine and kind of create future stories, even in this story. But yeah, like I said, the Faia pages were a little on the rough side.
Right. That being that, one last tie-in book we got that I'm skimming the rest through. is War of the Realms War Scrolls number 3, and this won't take long because we both skimmed it and we both really don't have much to say about it.
Okay.
Because so Daredevil's part wrapped up. He fought Kurz, which apparently this takes place before the last book we just talked about.
Right.
Clearly.
Apparently so.
Yeah. And actually, I used the wrong book. I said the wrong book, but that's fine. That part got night. I guess he finally gave up his powers or whatever. No, he didn't, because he still got the thing. But his part gets wrapped up on whatever that is. The art on the for the cover, I guess specifically, seems a little misleading.
For War Scrolls? Oh yeah, because it has Kingpin on it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So and Daredevil fights. Fighting Kurz, and he goes up against Malekith. Well, first he goes up against Malekith, ends up fighting Kurz. Curse, I keep on the word, regardless. And then that gets dealt with. Thanks to the Bifrost, who we thought was shattered.
Right. I mean, from what I remember, that was a nice action sequence.
It was, yeah. There was some good art in there, but still.
So. Kind of, but you know, the rest of the stories weren't really.
Yeah, like there's Dr. Doom and Latveria, who he was defending from whatever. That one, some about the Fantastic Four, obviously had to get put in there initially. And then there was the thing that I think you had I'm not sure if I want to say issue about, but you.
Well, not even an issue. It was just the art was just distracting.
Yeah, that it is. So, which is basically a romp with She-Hulk, aka Jen Walters, and Freya, which I don't know when this takes place.
it happens before they get to the Dark Bifrost.
Right. I mean, yeah, clearly on their way to, but, you know, I'm saying, like, you would think that part also got covered between a couple books.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's just a little, you know, it's a little interlude story.
Sure. Actually, I kind of would actually want to see She-Hulk and Freya just in a little mini together. I don't know. But that is what it is. And yeah, we know the rest of the story after that. So this is just kind of a little pop point. All right. So that's it for that. Because like I said, there wasn't really much else to say about it.
Okay.
The next thing we said we were going to get to was Justice League number 26, which was apparently a... decently sized, not in length, I mean, not in actuality, but and how people felt about it. A decently sized book.
Right, well, Justice League has been leading up to what has been called, I guess it's a mini event.
Year of the Villain, right.
Within the pages of Justice League.
Well, sure, but they never
really because to right it. Because if I'm not mistaken, that's how Snyder's described the book now,
makes sense.
Each story is kind of a mini event,
right? And we've gotten some within the past four issues. We have gotten some revelations, or at least specific issue. We've gotten some revelation, and a couple of other things happen, you know,
right?
In the last few,
right? So we open with. John Jones, the Martian Manhunter, on a quest for his truth, because we've seen some hints at a slightly retconned version of his origin story.
Spoiler alert, he also has a miniseries going on right now that's kind of dealing with some of that.
But, you know.
Yeah.
Justice League.
I know.
So it's the flagship. It's their flagship, right?
True. Agree. It's still weird.
So ultimately, what we have is a gathering of heroes, the DC version, in the House of Heroes, which I did not know existed. So shout out to PCN underscore Dirt, who was kind enough to explain this to me in our behind the scenes discussions, because PCN underscore Dirt couldn't be here tonight. I was able to ask him beforehand. When all this happened, what is this House of Heroes BS? Because And I freely admit this, my knowledge of DC lore and canon and history does have significant gaps in it.
Same.
So I did not know that there was a mechanism where at one point in 2014, they introduced a satellite that is on the edge of time and space that can interface with all of the different multiverses, and you can communicate with all the different heroes of the multiverse. And holy cow, I did not know this could happen. I thought this was like the stuff of crossovers.
Which, but, I guess, kind of is in a way.
Right, but when I mean crossover, I mean like, oh, we're going to make a big deal about crossing into another dimension or whatnot. But this is just like, hey, what's going on over there in Kingdom Come Land? What's going on over there, Justice Society of America, wherever you're from? And I see, the Black Superman reality. I can't remember what Earth, whatever that is.
That's Multiversity. I think, wasn't that, is that Earth 2?
Right. Like I said, I couldn't remember the number.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I wasn't going to guess. But at the end of the day, that threw me off.
Right.
And I apologize because that definitely colored my view on the entire book and definitely left me with a sour taste in my mouth, not knowing. And I didn't, and having read this on my way home, I didn't really want to jump online and find out what that was. I needed to have it explained to me.
So,
and, you know, and I appreciated that. Now I understand why, but still, it's kind of silly.
Is it, though? Because, I mean, realistically, I mean, us not knowing aside, it's basically them using a set of toys. Like, they've kind of been hitting, like, they've kind of been hitting and recalling stuff in these last few issues, especially because it's dealing with the multiverse. It's not that hard to be, for me, to believe that this thing existed, especially when you have, like, the Watchtower and all that kind of other stuff. But aside of that, I'm not surprised about this. Now, right. Where it come from, apparently it's come from the Multiversity, which... You know, I think that Black Superman was kind of prominent then also, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
I'm not sure. I never read it. But that was, who did Multiversity? Why am I blanking? I shouldn't be blanking because it's crazy. Grant Morrison, thank you. Nice touch. I like that. It's pretty good.
So ultimately... This is a meeting of the minds. This is a gathering of heroes to figure out how to proceed against the Legion of Doom and right. Perpetua.
And it just so happened it's going to be staged from this side watchtower. This
right, the house tower. The House of Heroes. Yeah. And John Jones and Hawkgirl are going to be playing a big part in this.
So, yay. Are they? So... Okay, we found out last issue that we talked about this, that we got apparently two new members of the Justice League, or there's at least third side members or something. Worldbreaker, and then the kid from the quote unquote future kid from Martian Manhunter and Hawkgirl,
right,
is still floating around, literally.
Correct.
So, well, I imagine they're gonna do something with that, but that one was kind of similar. It seemed like they would have kind of swept that away.
Apparently, they're playing a role. I mean, obviously, the World Forger is playing a big role because he proposes the terms of what it is that they have to do, which is they have to get the Monitor and Anti-Monitor together.
Right. And get them on their side so they can fight.
Exactly.
Perpetua. So, yeah, that part I got. Granted, I don't think this person got brought up that much in here, but I just noticed that was a thing. So... also, I guess it's worth noting that because we're in a multiversal setting, you will be seeing, some multiversal characters. And not to no surprise to Flash, this is like, oh yeah, this is just Tuesday. It's like, yeah, because, you know, an allusion to Flashpoint. I'm like, yeah, I've done the alternate Earth thing, blah, blah, blah. So, and apparently he's been here before.
He's more used to it, apparently.
Right. He's not surprised about it, unlike Jon Stewart. So, which actually I feel like that goes, that kind of plays into their Justice League animated series relationship, because I feel like I felt that kind of vibe off of them when they were talking.
Sure. I definitely agree with that. That's a good point.
Yeah. But, so yeah, you see characters like, did the Black Superman, Kal-El, show up in this? I don't remember. But regardless,
he was in the background. Because I spotted the uniform.
Right.
He's up there on the platform with Bizarro Superman, I think.
Right, okay. But we also see
last page.
Right, but we also see folks like Captain Carrot.
Right. And Kingdom Come Superman as well.
Exactly. So. Which I said beforehand, we will probably be seeing, I would imagine, again in Young Justice, because
shout out to Batman Beyond. He's there too.
Yeah, he's also there too. So yeah, so you see a bunch of folks. That show up, including some folks like from other Prime books, like just like the Terrifics are there. I'm assuming that's them and not like alternate versions. And then you also see the current version of Teen Titans,
right
there, which Teen Titans did come out this week, but I didn't read it, so I don't know if it ties in, but I know what happens in that book, sort of. Which has nothing to do with this, so I don't know if it's going to tie in at the end of it or whatnot. I should skim that. Regardless, so Justice League 2 and 6 was kind of some not necessarily saying things happen, but
it's a setup, right? And yes. This is definitely a setup issue going forward to establish, like I said, to establish what the terms of the next couple of engagements are supposed to be, which is, you know, what their plan is, which is to find the Monitor and Anti-Monitor and to deal with John Jones not going rogue, but kind of off investigating something which is related to his origin.
Right. And apparently Ryan Choi is actually alive and in the Prime Universe from what I'm going back and reading.
Gaps in our DC knowledge.
Basically. So yeah, and Terrifics are there, like in the Metal Man and a whole bunch of other people are at the staging area. So
yeah. So, you know, as we just right, as we know, Snyder described this as an ongoing event type book. So
right, that may or may not be touching these other books that's been mentioned, but still.
Right. So this is definitely, you know, this is an all hands on deck scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I was just, you know, and I guess my excuse me, mm-hmm. I should have hit mute.
That's all right.
My initial kind of put off reaction to this was really just a reaction to with the ease of which they had this concept of, you know, getting the band, getting the entire team together. And I just didn't know that was something that had already been established as possible and very easy to do.
You didn't want to believe that DC's multiverse was similar to what's going on in Marvel.
I don't even know about that. It's even easier for them to gather. That's the thing.
Well, yeah, but like I said, the seeds are there.
You know, and I was just going to add before we move on, in Marvel, you need a Secret Wars to get everybody together like this.
And we still don't know if everybody even, like, we only know a couple of people actually even remember that part about it.
Exactly. Like Miles and who else?
I think there was some hint that Tony might, but I'm not really sure. Well, and we know, like, Spider-Gwen does, because she comes back and forth, but...
Right.
But I mean, we're talking about the events of Secret Wars, not necessarily the multiverse hopping.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. That's still a whole thing there. But yeah.
I guess you could argue this is like the web of life within the Spider-Verse and Spider-Geddon.
Kinda, yes.
Stories.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, with all of the crises and you know, what some of the seeds that have been going on here and in, like, say, Young Justice kind of filling in some stuff, it's not that hard to believe, because even it's been established the fact that other multiverses or other realms know about the crises because they get affected by them. Like, that's been established in, maybe not here, but in Young Justice. I think it kind of butted heads. And I keep pointing to that book because that's where some of the side stuff is kind of coming out of that, and which is not good for people who's not reading that book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to get that part, who could say where that's going to fit in the larger stream of things? But, you know, being Justice League is supposed to be its own big thing. There's some, this stuff on the side is also getting bled off
mm-hmm.
and mentioned.
Last note on this, there's a half Matrix reference in this, where apparently part of the one of the vetoed plans by the Justice League was to have John Jones telepathically download martial arts prowess into every living person on the planet. It's like, I know Kung Fu.
Which, boy, are we going to get into something to that later on.
All right, next up.
Yeah, so moving right along.
What's next?
Pick a book. Oh, wait, actually, we skipped a book.
Guardians?
Yep.
All right, let's hit it.
So this was a good book this week.
Yes, it was the culmination of quite a few issues of storytelling.
Yeah. We start off with a little, I don't want to call it a pep talk, but we, you know, a cinematic, like, look, this is what things are right now. This is who we are. Let's go.
It was a nice summary, too.
Yes.
Definitely a nice summary because it got us all caught up, got us back on the same page as our heroes. And it was nice to see, I guess, Bill kind of be the muscle that the Guardians have always kind of needed.
Bill was VIP in this issue. We can go ahead and say that. Yeah. Actually, Bill with a little bit of Moondragon side, but yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Which is kind of sad given how this book, how this issue ends. But get into what happened. So, yeah, the troops that are being rallied by...
Oh, I'll hit the spoiler bell.
Yeah, sure. It's not going to be that much, but... I forgot about that part. I think I had my notes on it. But anyway, Quill rallies the troops. They're going in after Hela and the being converted to back to life Thanos by way of one Eros, aka Star Fox. I was about to make that same mistake. That's why I stopped. Star Fox, who apparently is gone now? Question mark?
As gone as anyone ever is in comics.
Well, actually, I think there's a story we might get to later on if we haven't already talked about it last week, but we don't know. But basically, as far as we know, he's on the board. So yeah, the troops are rallied. You know, they go in storming the base. Bill, you know, is VIP like a G. We love Beta Ray Bill around here. That's why we, you know, so it's all good. Things get dealt with, such as, well, one, that base, two, Thanos, and also Star Fox, possibly, and Hela by proxy, because. Mm-hmm. The same thing that happened, let's just say the same thing that tended to happen at the end of the first Guardians issue ends up happening to a few people here, specifically on the bad guy side. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that this is the end of any of them, maybe with the exception of one, but... Pretty much halfway through the book, we get like, okay, well, dealt with, sort of. Because, yeah, all that gets, like I said, Hela gets dealt with. So does Thanos, sort of, who wasn't fully baked at the time that they fought him. Eros looks like he's got taken out by Gamora, go figure, it's a family affair. But then, after all is said and done, they have a rest period, seeming like.
Mm-hmm. They get to reset. They get to reset themselves.
Basically. So, and in turn, reset the group.
Right.
Because Quill's like, hey, I'm proud to have all of you as guardians. And then some people are like, I gotta go.
Yeah. It's like, wait, I didn't sign up for this.
Right. Which, sadly, is Beta Ray Bill.
Right. What I was going to add is, so there's a couple things that pop up in this issue that are nice developments that are going to have more. You know, we're going to say more about them later on because,
and that we've probably seen in cinematically. If you're going where I think you are.
Well, ultimately, what I was going to mention is what happens to Thanos, Hela, and Nowhere.
Right.
because of the nature of what we're the weapon that Hela is using in this issue that is related to what happens in Silver Surfer Black, what happens to all these heroes.
Right. I saw my notes. Yeah, my note. Because I asked that very question. So Proxima Midnight has this gun, I guess, that she got from Hela that shoots black holes. She has used it before. And as we talked about in Silver Surfer Black last week, we see how the rest of them get out of said black hole, but that self-same weapon comes back to play in here, but gets used against them, or against some of them. Again, Beta Ray Bill, VIP, MVP, rather.
Or MVP, yeah.
MVP, yes. Well, he's a VIP also to some
of Sure.
But MVP for certain. As he says in famous Thor way, I say thee nay.
Yeah, that was nice to see.
Yes.
I don't get to hear Thor say that nearly enough.
Yep, but here's Bill to pick up the pistol. Sure. So, again, like I said, that gets taken care of. Seemingly taking out nowhere Hela, that Thanos, whom the weapon hits directly, and, like I said, Star Fox in proxy, because he was already dead at the time. So, which brought to my question is like, okay, so being that that is the self-same weapon that put everybody in a black hole, and that's where Silver Surfer is right now, are we going to see Hela, Nowhere, and or Thanos pop up in Silver Surfer Black, which we already know he's dealing with somebody else at the time as right. his first issue. But I'm kind of curious about that, but I kind of doubt it. Like, that would be, I don't want to say too easy, but like, that would be kind of convenient. But we don't know where that story is going to go, so who even knows?
Right. So we
One more thing.
But I was going to ask you what your movie tie-in.
The whole thing with the whole Gamora Star Lord thing, which technically I guess possibly started way back in the day from here, but I feel like because of the movie stuff and his feelings for her that cropped up here has been a more recent thing cinematically. Which they don't go, it gets brought up and it's like, we don't have to deal with that right now.
Right. That's for future issues.
Right.
What I was going to mention is that, it's a shame that Drax was never really Drax the Destroyer that was like, a cosmic powerhouse.
Not like
he was always exactly. No, not the cape wearing version.
Right.
The knife wielding version was super depowered. So yes. It's kind of cool that the Guardians actually have like a legit cosmic powerhouse on their team now.
Oh, you talking about Phyla?
No, well, that and Beta Ray Bill for now at least.
Wait, I thought Bill was like...
No, he stuck around.
Oh, did he?
Okay. Look at the last page.
Yeah, I'm scrolling. Okay, you're right.
The last That's page.
Because right, it was Nova. Yes, right. It was Nova and Gladiator that left. And that, yeah, okay.
Right.
Bill is still around. So, yes.
Oh, Gladiator was never going to stick around.
Well, that is also true.
So, but Nova, I thought, might stick around.
I thought so, too. I was like, she was like, no.
but listen, I don't know what the status of the Nova Corps is at this point, and no one's really talking about it.
Which I maybe that's going to be a problem coming up.
What I was going to add is that it seems like Richard Rider is kind of like a one-man Nova Corps, or at least like one-man like Nova Corps powered, Nova power or Nova Force powered. I think that's what it is, Nova Force, right?
Sure, let's go with that. But we also know that the Nova Corps is kind of sort of still around. Well, I don't know, because if you remember Champions, Sam is going to get a helmet.
But they're all like human. They're all like regular powered dudes with guns, like the way that they are in the movies.
Right.
That's my point. Like he might be the last Nova Force powered core guy.
Sure. Which I also noticed that his helmet, which was messed up, when he encountered the Guardians a couple of issues back, was all messed up, but seemingly all right here.
Right. After the battle, I guess he had a chance to repair it or whatever.
Yeah, sure. We'll go with that. Comic.
Yeah.
Comics. But one last thing to note is that there is going to be something that we'll apparently see again in the Avengers coming up.
And oh, yeah.
That is one Frank Castle, the former, or he's not necessarily a former, the Cosmic Ghost Rider, who we thought bought it, but apparently not, ends up in hell with one with one Johnny Blaze, who's like, hey, you want to race? And then it was like, and then they're like, see Avengers 22 when that happens.
Right. That was ultimate Marvel continuity power move right there. Yep. Like, hey, guess what? You want to tune into Avengers number 22 to see this.
Yeah. It's like, oh, by the way, go over here. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you didn't know who's in charge of hell right now, it's actually Johnny Blaze, Ghost Rider.
So. Right. Which has been kind of loose since Damnation. Because, like, yeah, when Damnation happened, we knew that's when he ended up with the title. But then, since then, like, we see Mephisto still floating around and acting like, well, then he's kind of acting like his, you know, he's still in charge. And even in a couple of books, he's still there. So, I mean, granted, yeah, hell's a big place, but still.
Right. I think in the last, within the last several issues of Avengers, we've seen hints of, right. Remember, with Robbie Reyes and Johnny Blaze. So.
Right, which I'm imagining that's going to, yeah, that is probably the tie that is going to come back with this.
Right. And so this is I kind of laughed when I saw that, like, oh wow, Marvel continuity is back.
Right, right. I'm like, wow, that's I applauded that because I was like, okay, I legit didn't expect that to happen in this book.
Like, seriously, like a hardcore editorial note.
Right.
Like, right there in the panel, like, hey, if you want to see this, you got to tune into this book.
You're right, a book that's not even tied to that book. I was like, right, huh, all right. Go ahead on with it. But yeah, so ultimately that's pretty much that. People come, people go. There is a new set of Guardians, some mix of new and old, and then they go into something, potentially go into something that we are going to find out in a couple of months that we found out a few months back through the solicits, in that there is a missing member of the Guardians that they're going to apparently go try to find.
They're finally, I was about to say, they're finally at the end of their opening story arc. Right. You know, there's six issues in, they get past this arc, and now they have to deal with the elephant in the room, which is, where's Rocket? Right. And they literally deal with it on the last page of the book.
Right, they bring it back. It was like, hey, guess what? We're going into the next arc. Which... Mm-hmm. From what I remember, and I know there's going to be, if this goes the way the solicits and whatnot are going, I know a very, potentially know a very sad Rocket Raccoon fan.
If we shall see. Way.
Yeah, but we don't know how that's going to go. And that last page, or the next issue page, it's not given any help. But at the same time, that also doesn't mean anything at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So we shall see in the coming months. So next up, because we've spent a lot of time on that. It's a good book. Did you read Miles by chance?
I did.
Sweet. Miles Morales, Spider-Man number 7.
All right. So it's a three-part story. Yes. It's a day in the life. And...
Also a seemingly almost cinematic tie. In a way.
Okay.
If you think about it.
It's a Spider-Verse?
Basically.
Other than the cover?
Well, I mean, the cover is evocative, definitely, because, and who's also in the book with him, especially during that first part. And they kind of play it like they played it into the Spider-Verse.
I see what you mean.
Yes.
I see what you mean.
And by what we're talking about is...
Right, so the character we're talking about, and I'll ring the spoiler bell, but it's not that big a spoiler since we're talking about Spider-Verse.
Not really, yeah.
We're talking about good old Uncle Aaron. Not the Prowler in the Marvel Universe, though.
Well, he was. He is and was, but yes, he has gone through a couple of iterations. Because he definitely... They definitely denote that he was the Prowler, but they also recognized recent events with him, you know, being Spider-Man and his other dealings, or posing as Spider-Man, I should say, the brief time he did.
Right. Well, he's the Iron, a version of the Iron Spider.
Right.
And they explain away all that stuff that happened at the end of towards the end of the last volume of Miles' book.
Right. So here's my question to you before we go any further. Is that when you found out Miles was Spidey?
I think so.
Because I don't remember that. And I'm just like,
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, remember that Aaron Davis was the Prowler in the Ultimate Universe.
Right. So,
you know, because believe it or not, in Amazing, the Prowler appeared and Peter Parker's is like, Hobie? So.
Right.
And so that's why that's why you kind of threw me for a second there with that, because
Which is why I kind of said some of that, because yeah, he kind of was, but like you just said, he was the ultimate version. But they did, but even in this issue, they kind of was like, you know.
Right. I mean, they let that slide because he's not a fugitive anymore.
Exactly.
he's living. You know, he's living as a free person now. So
yeah, and living apparently rather large.
Right.
Which, by the way, I know we had a story on this last week or week before last, and you could definitely, this is definitely colored by the fact that we know in issue 10 that the Ultimate Universe is somehow going to play a part in Miles' book, and we're starting to see shades of that in a couple of different ways. With that, one.
Well, I see, right.
Right, and whom Miles meets up with in the next part of the story.
Oh, with Bombshell.
Right. So, yeah, so like Agent 7 said, those three parts. First, first Miles is trying to get some info on Tombstone, who he's had some dealings with, and he knows his Uncle Aaron had some dealings with him. You know, they chop it up a little bit, and then Miles ends up going off to save the day. And that part was being narrated by Uncle Aaron.
Bombshell.
No. Well, the first part, but yes.
Oh, okay.
Then the second part is being narrated by Bombshell, who I knew of in the Ultimate. My Ultimate Spidey knowledge is kind of Spidey because I knew Miles came from there and all that kind of good jazz. But and I knew they had something going on then, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, as far as I know, that did not carry over, or it didn't seem to carry over here until this.
It did.
Yeah.
It carried over a while.
Exactly. Like until
this it kind did, of no, but it shape. Did carry over in the post 616 Miles.
Oh, okay.
It definitely did carry over. So, you know, so this is just like the rekindling.
Sure. Or well, yeah.
You know, because remember, this is a new volume of Ultimate Spider-Man. So.
Right, and of course, she is also Bombshell is also with Champions.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Don't discount how long ago that was.
Oh, for sure.
Because the character, you know, like a great majority of Miles' supporting cast came over from the Ultimate Universe directly into the Marvel Universe. Ultimate Universe into the Marvel Universe,
including his parents who were dead, or at least one of his parents who were dead.
Right. Exactly. So we come to the third story in the book, and there's a little bit of background on Miles's mom,
Rio,
right, and her job, and you know we find out there's some news that the parents want to share with Miles,
mm-hmm. Which
not something we expected.
Well, right then and there is like I when I read that I was like, okay, she's pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was like you didn't even have to know, and but you knew,
right?
So, but yeah, so the rest of that goes on to being, you know, Miles catching up with them at a dinner thing, and he gets the news that he's going to be a big brother. So, and not in the, you know, not in the Foster way. But, so that's going to be a thing coming forward,
right.
And I'm kind of curious about that, sort of.
And we have a cliffhanger ending in the book, which is Miles getting captured by something.
Yes. Which I thought that was like, okay, well, after all of that, of course, well, not even of course, but like, huh, they're just going to sit here and after all of that, throw it completely off,
mm-hmm.
you know, by getting them captured by someone we don't know, and, you know, we don't know what, who, when, where, or how.
Right.
He just gets clunked on the head and wakes up somewhere else with seemingly other versions of him, or those were mirrors. I don't know what the case was on that.
Right. It's hard to tell. Yeah. Kind of like my beef with the art.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, what I just didn't like is that the story being in three parts was drawn by three different artists, and that was just tough on my eyes. No real issues with the quality of the art, but I thought that the difference in the styles were a little on the jarring side.
Right.
And that included the coloring as well.
Like, so, you kind of get it, because, yeah, it served the three different stories thing, but at the same time, they were, dare I say, at least the last one was slightly, was pretty drastic.
Right.
That's a little heavy-handed a word, but it's still kind of, yeah.
Right. So that's this issue. It was one of those, I don't know how often you've read these, but it's definitely in the vein of several different A Day in the Life of stories that have come and gone in the comics past.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah. I got that sense off of it. So, didn't expect that end, like, the way it ended. But then again, actually, I should have, because sometimes those stories end up like that. I was like, okay, you see this normal day in life and this and that. Like, but then, bloop, I think we have seen it fairly recently in another, not to this extent, but in another Spidey book, where it kind of goes one way, and then at the end it's like, oh no, this is, you know, here's what actually is going on.
Right.
So.
All right, so I guess we want to do like one other book, then we'll hit rapid fire.
Yes. Yeah, you got one?
No, I'm just looking to see what else we had in common, because, you know, if you want to just get to different books, we can.
I don't think we have anything else in common.
All right, let's spin it up.
Okay. Okay.
All righty.
Rapido Fighter.
If I may start.
Do it.
Batman number 73. In the wake of Bane basically breaking the Batman again, Flashpoint Batman, who has been working with Bane, has a plan to make his family whole again, and it involves Bruce Wayne and a casket. That's this issue, in a nutshell. Superman Year One. So this was another publication under the oversized. Was it the Black Label from DC?
I don't know if it's
what it's called. I want to say it's called the Black Label.
It would be that's the case, but I don't think. Oh yeah, DC Black Label is under that. So yes.
Yeah, it is Black Label, right? So this is just another out of continuity Superman origin that I think is going to end up making its way into canon and the movies at some point. They always do. They always do. Next, I've got Captain America number 11.
Well, I was about to say, before you go back, I was just going to say that it is a Frank Miller JRJR joint. So mm-hmm. go with that, what you feel. Not you, I'm just saying to the people out there.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, art-wise, it's actually a cleaner John Romita Jr. than it has been in a long time.
Mm.
You know, it has a very finished look to it. I'd have to look up to see who does the art on it. But, yeah, Frank Miller, you know, listen, at the end of the day, all these retellings, you know, it's not even so much a Frank Miller joint as it is a retelling of Superman origin. You know what people try to do with that is that they make their own tweaks. Again, back to what I was saying earlier, Captain America number 11. This is actually a potential click of the week for me. The best part of this is the narration, apparently in flashback, by Captain America himself as he breaks out of the Myrmidon. And there's some great work in there by the Daughters of Liberty. You know, a bunch of, you know, kind of a another group of female Marvel heroes banded together to help Cap out in this jam. So it's actually pretty entertaining to see them all work together. Daredevil number 7 is my next book. Zdarsky's new status quo for Daredevil and Hell's Kitchen continues. This is still part of a long-form story that Zdarsky's telling about Daredevil. I hate to say this once again, dealing with possibly not being Daredevil. Let's see, we did Guardians, we did Miles, Spidey. Oh, my last book is Uncanny X-Men number 20. So interestingly, for me, the best looking art that I saw this week told the worst story of the week. Rosenberg's run has quickly gone downhill, to me, as the body count has risen. Character deaths mean something, or else what's the point? The anti-mutant gene vaccine gets solved in a twisted way in this book. So that's that.
And again, I think we may have a story on character death thing, if that is actually a thing that's going to happen. So for myself, I have Shuri number 9, which I'm like, okay, so does the space grasshopper still in play? Apparently Shuri thought she was getting double crossed by a friend of hers, but and as it turns out, was a I guess a kind of a laid out plan by this mystery friend of hers to help in this situation with the space grasshopper by luring it into a vibranium mine, which Shuri is also, who has taken up the mantle of Black Panther again, by the way, is with Storm. So if you know anything about the character Storm, you know that her and enclosed places don't normally usually work well together. But comics, and they don't seem to draw upon her claustrophobia in that. Although there was some havoc that got wrought. But at the end of it, we come to find out that the mysterious friend who did not double cross, which also told on itself, is a mutant. By the way, his name, he goes by the name Muti. M-U-T-I, which apparently means something in South African, and I don't know just like, so excuse me, but means something in another language, but it was also, you know, saying, hey, he's a mutant, which he ends up was, which I knew so as soon as I heard that name, I'm like, watch this fool ends up being a mutant, and sure enough it was. So anyway, he and, at the end of this, he and Shuri end up in Djalia, where they're going to fight the space grasshopper thing in next issue. Star Wars number 67. So this is the last issue of the Keith Giffen Gillen. Excuse me, I keep wanting to call him
Kieron Gillen.
Kieron, that's what I said. That's what I meant. That's
what I did. She actually pulled it a completely
name. I know.
Another creator. Shout out to Keith Giffen.
I know, right? See that, and every time I feel bad about that because every time I see Kieron Gillen, I do that, and that's bad. That's not good. But anyway, Kieron Gillen, this is the last issue of his run, and I can't remember who's done art of it, but going into Greg Park and Fornoto's run next issue, we wrap up this arc dealing with Sho Tarun and their dealings with the Empire, because that planet is no longer there at the end of this book, let's put it that way. Because there were some guerrilla tactics being used that ended up going off. Some seemingly selfish heroing by an actor fellow that apparently didn't die. And everything kind of goes back to where it needs to be. And because everybody ends up back on, well, everybody who needs to be is back at home base with the Resistance. And there's a little tie to what's going to be next on the menu, which is going into the Empires of the Strikes Back era, because they even mention Hoth and a few other places by name. And like I said, next issue, Greg Pak and Fornoto is going to take over the book, so we'll see how that rolls out. Star Wars TIE Fighter number 3. So this is basically about an Empire TIE Fighter squadron called Shadow Wing. The premise of this book was, I think I talked about it the first issue, was that they had this mission that they went on and ended up drawn into something else because there was this rogue admiral who took over this mining colony and this other Star Destroyer that the team was sent in to go to get. But the team this issue finally get away from that, and they also find that they had some help on the inside because not everybody likes this person. But there's also some resistance interference that happens while they are trying to complete their primary mission. And in true Rogue One-ish type fashion, a few people die, not including a couple of people on said squadron. And apparently there's been some at the end of every issue, there's been flashback sequences to stuff that pretty much pan out the next issue or therein, which a couple, actually, I should take that back, because two of the last couple of them kind of tie into what foreshadowed here. And then the one for this issue is probably going to play up going forward. So we'll see how that works out. And I believe that is it for me. So, clicks of the week. And we already have two from our esteemed Not Here colleagues. Justice League number 26 comes from Dirt. I don't think he mentioned this as to why, but it is a thing. And Guardians of the Galaxy number 6 for Tim. Which I could have gone ahead and put down if I had thought about it beforehand. No, keep going. What's yours?
What's that?
So what is yours?
That's why I had to find the Jeopardy music, because I'm still thinking. How about you? Do you know yours already?
No, I was about to say, you're stalling the same as I am, huh? Got you. Cut it.
You got yours?
No, but I didn't want to get copyright stricken because they, you know.
Oh, I don't play. I wasn't going to play it that long.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't take much. Yikes. I don't know. Actually, you know what?
I mean, I only have two candidates.
I got a strong one.
You know, I only have two candidates. One is Guardians, yeah, and the other one's one. Cap. Because the Cap, I'll tell you, the Cap issue made me smile because there's just a couple of really nice lines in it. And unbelievably, quotes Donald Rumsfeld of all people.
Oh, jeez.
But
quotes also in the news for. By the way, right. Happy Juneteenth, or else it's late at the time you hear this.
Oh, it's a daily. Yeah,
but still. Captain Ta-Nehisi Coates was at the hearing speaking, quite eloquently. So.
Yeah, on reparations. Yep. So, shout out to him, and shout out to him on writing a pretty good Cap story so far. I've enjoyed it. So I'm really kind of caught between Guardians and Cap.
I'm probably just going to go ahead and say, because Guardians is the stronger one for me, so I'm just going to go ahead and say that.
I think I'm going to back all of the two of you guys on that and just make it a 3. And just go Guardians of the Galaxy number 6, because it was a pretty good wrap to what had been, you know, kind of a longish story. Right. And, you know, and it reset the Guardians in a good way, and moves them on into their next adventure, which is funny, and, you know, which is like, you know, it's like hitting the spare after, you know, knocking 9 out of 10 down. You know?
Bowling references, great, nice. All right, so that being that,
I'm not even a bowler. I just happen to think, you know, I happen to think of like that one last little thing that that Kate's accomplished.
Sure.
In the book, which is, oh, hey, by the way, we need to talk about what's going on with Rocket.
Right. So. Which we know, kind of, sort of, being that he was recently in the Avengers little mini, whatever, which would almost open me up to a rant, but I'm not going to do that right now. Not necessarily about him, but about the whole event thing. We don't need to do that right now. So let's us go into the ad read. First ad read of the night.
Our first ad read of the night is for Funko, Fun at First Sight, your home for exclusive collectibles, such as their world-famous Pop Vinyl bobbleheads, apparel, including t-shirts, hats, and socks, and brand merchandise, custom DIY pop figures, art books, and skateboards. And now, the listeners of the Comic Book Chronicles can enjoy 10% off your entire purchase when shopping at Funko. To place your first order with 10% off and to help keep our show free for you, go to our network website at cspn.us. That's cspn.us. Then click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down to the Funko link and place your order. When you get to the checkout, put in the offer code SHOP10 for your 10% off discount. Funko through cspn.us. Do it today.
That sport thing is so, so sad. Anyway, into the news. And we start. Oh, okay. Solicitations are out for September 19th for a lot of places.
Yep.
Well, for a few different places. I didn't see Marvel's. I know Valiant. I forgot to get
Marvel Valiant. Dropped today.
Yeah, I just saw that. And Valiant's dropped earlier today also. And DC and somebody else had already dropped. Regardless, that is the thing going forward. We start off as we normally do with the cinematic news with. Wait. God dang it. That's not even the first story. Hold on a second.
What happened?
What happened was I didn't finish putting the stories. I didn't finish ordering up the stories while we were talking earlier. So that's awesome. That's a good thing. Behind the scenes, folks. You gotta love it.
What happened?
Yeah. It happens. Got to talking, got to Ruben. Banana Splits movie is officially rated R for horror, violence, and gore. So you remember we probably about a month or two ago or whenever that was, we talked about the possibility of a Banana Splits movie. If you are a certain vintage,
we did.
Right. Yeah, we did. But apparently it is a thing that is actually happening. And it is actually, just like the report said, sounds like going to be a horror type movie. Now, if you are of a certain vintage, you may have heard of the Banana Splits, may have even seen it, if you are even an older vintage. Because, let's face it, I was born a while ago, and I remembered them in syndication. This was an old 60s. Basically, this is an old 60s show, which blended cartoons and live action folk like what you see here. And they had a pretty catchy theme song, which I won't go into.
Okay.
But apparently, they're going to make a horror movie down there. And I'm going to guess, and this article says it, so I don't have to guess. If you are a video game fan and you know of the video game Five Nights at Freddy's, pretty sure it's going to be something similar to that. So
okay.
So Five Nights at Freddy's was a video game where you played the operator. You basically worked at a Chuck E. Cheese late night, and things came after you and to try to get you, some of which were animatronic and spooky and scary. It was a big hit. Next up,
it's official. Aqualad has been cast for the Titans DC Universe Act. So Pretty Little Liars actor Drew Van Acker has been cast as Aqualad in DC Universe's Titans. So congratulations to him for being cast as Aqualad.
I guess. And if you're watching the video, you'll see a picture of him. Don't know him.
Okay.
Next up, Stargirl may have found its Artemis, and this would be Artemis Croc, who I'm not sure if I know.
You know what I was going to say?
What's that?
For all these casting news pieces that we have, I think I need to create a sound effect of Korath, Jaimin Hansu's character from Guardians of the Galaxy that, when he says yeah. "Ooh,"
right? Yeah, I was with you on that.
I got to write that down. Go ahead.
Right. No, I was just gonna say Artemis Clark. I'm thinking because there's obviously a couple of Artemis in the DC universe, not the app, but just in general. And so right. I don't know if this is one of them too. I don't think it is definitely not the Amazonian. And I don't believe it is the one from Young.
Yeah, I was about to say the Amazonian didn't have a last name.
Right. So we will see how that flows. Either way, you know, it's Stargirl's show. It's coming in. Yeah, there's going to be.
Neither does the Greek goddess. So.
Right. Exactly. Next up.
DC Universe's Harley Quinn series is reportedly added Sanaa Lathan as the new voice of Catwoman.
Hey.
All right.
Yeah, if that is true, then hey, welcome. So, yeah, we'll see if that works out. Next up, the CW's Crisis on Infinite Earth is officially underway, and I believe that is the shooting of it. Not necessarily the event, because I believe the event is not going to happen until December. So, yes, work has officially begun on Crisis on Infinite Earths, this year's crossover between the CW's DC TV shows. Say that 5 times fast. I'm pretty sure that wouldn't be hard to do. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's the thing. It's happening, and it'll show up. Yeah, I think it's December. I don't remember, but there's not a date here. Regardless, it's coming. Possibly the last one, I guess, because since Arrow's leaving and I'm not sure if any of the other shows are leaving, but I know there's at least one show that's going around a bend and ending. So who knows? Next
up, Aquaman actor Jason Momoa has revealed which MCU mutant he wants to play, and that is Snickety Snit Snoochie Boochies.
Oh, jeez.
Not exactly Jason Mewes from from The Clerks. And
what if it was, though?
What's that?
What if it was, though?
Yeah, right? From The Clerks universe, or the Askewniverse, right? He wants to play Wolverine. He's in my opinion, still a little too tall for that. Jackman apparently was always too tall for that.
Yeah, I was about to say, as opposed to?
People didn't care. I cared. Well, I was always unhappy with the fact that the dude was, you know, that tall.
Mm. They're saving the short, stocky dudes for Puck. That was a joke, but I don't know. That could very well happen. We don't know. They could very well do an Alpha Flight movie. Anyway, that's his dream casting choice, I guess. Whatever. I think we'll go into another such one later on, which I'm not sure why I don't have here. Birds of Prey, DC's female-led ensemble film's debut first poster. That's a weird sentence, or I screwed it up, one of the two. Either way, there is a poster for the Birds of Prey movie. I'm not going to say the whole name because that's a long name. That was apparently shown off on the DC Universe or a DC Universe app. Twitter account. That doesn't look like the official one, but regardless.
Okay.
Oh, wait. It says first poster for DC's Birds of Prey debuted at this year's Cine Europe convention in Barcelona. So there you go. Not much of a logo, not much of a poster, but it's there. You know, if you're watching,
that's pretty crazy looking with that middle part. You know, with the Harley part. So
yeah, it's like almost like something like when the movie comes, it'll be like Birds of Prey comes up, and then it'll be scribbled in as they tend to do. But hey, there you go. I'm sure we'll see more of that coming through. Next up.
Yes. This is no surprise.
No, not so much. I don't know if you mentioned it, if y'all mentioned it in the Treasure Edition, but go ahead.
I think we did, but just in case we didn't, in Avengers Endgame. Spoiler alert, because maybe you waited for the re-release with the extended footage
that's coming out next weekend. We'll talk about that.
But I'm going to ring the bell just in case. Yeah, so the Hulk has a big scene in Endgame in which everything above him that was once Avengers compound falls on top of him. Mm-hmm. And he's holding it up, and it is an homage to the cover of Marvel Superhero Secret Wars number 4, in which the Hulk stands under, I believe it's 150 billion tons.
That sounds right. Basically, the Gas Mountain. Yeah.
Right, and he's not happy.
And he wasn't.
Right, and the Russos admitted that, yes, in fact, that was an homage to that particular image.
Not as many characters as the Secret Wars version that he was holding it up trying to save.
But still.
You know, it was there. And weirdly enough, also kind of reminded me of that one Spidey, you know, more so that one Spidey classic cover or part where he's, you know, where he's in a similar situation. But obviously, you know, this is it. And I thought that when watching... and I never got to say it on the thing. I don't know if I would have actually remembered it because I'm not sure if I had it in my notes. Regardless, it's confirmed, and I'm happy to see that. Next up, speaking of Avengers Endgame, the Endgame crew teases future Cap stories, deleted Infinity War moments. So you would imagine that we're starting to get into Blu-ray territories here. But during a spoiler-heavy discussion about the movie on the Empire Film Podcast, co-directors Joe and Anthony Russo teased the answer that may be explored sometime down the road, that being about old Cap. That could be a story for another time. It's something that we'll be explaining, perhaps at some point. Whom it is noted that the Russos are taking a break from Marvel movies, so I'm curious about when that's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's alluded to in this article that maybe this will show up in that Loki series on Disney Plus, or maybe one of the other series like Falcon and Winter Soldier.
We shall see.
We shall see.
Next up is a story that I literally just talked about moments ago.
Mm-hmm.
Avengers Endgame is coming back to theaters with new surprises after the credits and apparently... new footage as well.
As somebody I follow said earlier today, and I kind of agree with, I wouldn't be surprised if this was the case. Oh, they're putting the Blu-ray extras in showing the Blu-ray extras in the movie theater now.
Possibly, because it's an unadulterated ploy to try to overtake Avatar in way fewer days. So yes. That works for me. That. Screw Avatar.
Yeah, which... Like, it doesn't make a difference because Disney's getting the money either way.
Right. What I was going to add, though, is I still haven't seen it a second time. And neither this is I. The perfect reason to go see it a second time.
Wait, I take it back. I did see it. I'm lying on myself. I did see it a second time.
Okay. I put off seeing it a second time. I had plans fall through with some friends to go see it a second time. So maybe... This will be impetus, you know, for that second viewing before getting it on Blu-ray.
I mean, it's probably so close to... I mean, sure. Yeah, if you do, let us know. But shout out to TDLQ85 for that, because that was the person in question I talked about that I saw that from. So, got to attribute. But speaking of fans going to see the movie multiple times... fan has seen Avengers Endgame 116 times in quest for world record. Augustin Alanis, not Morissette, this person needed to duck out for back from Best or Byline. But anyway, regardless, so this person, Augustin Alanis, Florida, he's a Florida man. So Florida man sees... That's all you got to say. Florida man sees Avengers. Actually, no. Usually, the Florida man articles are usually more crazier than this. But so he saw. So yes, this dude saw. He's 30 years old, so he's still youngish. Saw in game 116 times. So he's partially why they're getting some of this money they are, and who knows how Well, actually, I don't know if it says here. So he's saying he's doing it for the record, and I don't know if he's doing something like MoviePass or he's actually paying out of pocket for this whole thing.
I would hope he's watching matinees.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. Like, surely there is something to offset the cost, because if he's doing primetime viewings all this whole time, he's... And granted, I don't know the pricing, because obviously the pricing is slightly different and different. I know it's way big. It's real bad up there where you are.
Yeah.
And it's not great here, but at the same time, it sounds like it's a few dollars cheaper. I don't know.
Possibly.
But regardless, hey, this person is supposedly doing a world record. I guess that hopefully works. I know I felt like I have heard rumors of people doing it for other reasons, and I won't go into that because it's just so, so silly. But apparently his goal is 200 viewings or close to it. I don't know if that was a world record for a movie prior to this, but I guess he's going to go for it. Oh, it says Alan's, yeah, Guinness World Record for most cinema productions attended, same film. And but it doesn't say, I guess it's
so the record is
the goal. So, yeah, I guess the goal is 200. Because it says his goal is 200 viewing, so maybe that's the record.
Jeez.
Or close to it. Because it doesn't sound like, I don't recall this, well, not that I keep that close to world records, but. I would assume there's not a record prior record to this. Or if there is, I don't know about it. But hey, Florida Man strikes again, regardless. Let's move on.
Next up, Marvel has talked to Keanu Reeves about joining the MCU several times. Whoa.
Yeah,
really. So, my understanding is that Feige came out and said that... that Marvel has been in talks with Reeves, and they're looking for a part for him to, you know, they're looking for the right part for him to play. There have recently been rumors that he's been approached to play a role in Eternals.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the first time that they've spoken to him about a role.
Part of this rings like, okay, Keanu's big right now. Obviously, been hot for a minute. Not saying that he hasn't been. You know, even the whole E3 stuff that you know, him showing up at E3 recently, you know,
right,
kind of stokes some more fires. Not that he needed it, not that the game he went there for needed it either, but, you know.
He's definitely part of the current zeitgeist because he's just that, you know, it's not even it's not even to say that he's overexposed. He's just everywhere right now.
Right. And, I mean, and, you know, for one reason or another, you know, whether his movies aside or just him, you know.
Right.
He's popular, you know. We like him around these parts. Safe to say. Not to the point of some people's, but, you know. Regardless, so this whole thing kind of rung like, okay, sure you were. Like, but, and the cynical part of me was like, okay, yeah, you say that now because he's been hot and people, you know, he's been popping up everywhere like you just said. You know, sure you say that, but at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if they were trying to get him in a movie. Like I said, some of it just doesn't, it was like, yeah, sure, he's high, so of course you would try to get him in there, but, or at least say you've been trying to, but I don't know, I have no reason to doubt it.
Yeah, I suspect that they really have been, to be honest.
You know, and of course, going along with, not necessarily going along with this article, but there have been people around this article coming out and just in general, dream casting, you know, Keanu as folks in the Marvel universe. I have heard, we've heard Adam Warlock. I've seen Reed Richards.
The Silver Surfer.
I have seen the Norman Reed Silver Surfer. Moon Knight was one of them, actually. I can't think, it was a comic creator, might have said that, I don't remember who, but. So, yeah, there's been no shortage of dream castings for
that would be super interesting. Knight,
as a, yeah, right?
As like a take on the John Wick action.
Oh, you know? So you're saying he would be playing one of his personas and not all of them?
Well, no, just in terms of the costumed action.
Sure.
That would be a take would he be playing on Mr. Knight? The John Wick action.
He'd be doing Mr. Knight, basically. And then,
yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, yeah, that one was like, huh, I can kind of see it. Like I said, the Reed Richard one, I could kind of see it, but at the same time, no. Because I'm not gonna sit here and say like
I don't think he would be my first choice for
me. No, he for certain like he's stoic, yes, but at the same time
and aloof, yes,
yes,
that's the thing,
right? But he doesn't, and I feel I don't. I what I'm about to say is gonna sound bad. He doesn't necessarily come off as
it's like book smart.
Yes, thank you.
Well, that's the Ted. But, that's yes. The Ted character. That's
well, no, it's not even just that though. It's like I mean, because you can go to like Matrix, John Wick, yeah. All of that. These people don't say all that much, and what they do say is not necessarily, you know,
right.
Especially Matrix, you know, it's like he doesn't. You know, it's not that verbal, you know, which I guess plays part of it, but at the same time, like he doesn't. I don't want to say he doesn't come out as smart because obviously he's a pretty intelligent man, I'm sure in his own right, but. Yeah, that's I don't know. It's weird, but if we do get him into MCU role, I shudder to think as to what it might be at this point. Maybe it may not ever happen. We don't know. I feel like if it does, though, it's like okay, yeah, sure, that was gonna happen because everybody else in the grandma of high profile has gotten in a movie just about. But that was my other cynical critique of it. But you know, if he happens to escape that, then great.
They're just waiting for Glenn Close. No, not Glenn Close. Meryl Streep. They got Glenn Close already.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, she's already done that.
they're waiting for Meryl Streep. Once they get Meryl Streep, they got everybody.
You're saying it's a lock? Yeah. Yeah. They're playing bingo. MCU bingo. Yep. Yeah, but moving right along, yeah. So we'll see if more of that, if anything comes out of
it. Yeah, Streep, De Niro, Pacino.
I was about to say, did they already? He didn't, but yeah, you're right. They got Kingsley already? Hell.
You know?
So
listen, they got Sam Jackson for a long time
already. Well, I mean, yeah, that one, but I can kind of see. And plus, he already.
I was trying to segue into our next story, but yeah.
You're right, yeah. Plus the Disney tie in, which still worked out because Samuel Jackson wants to play Mace Windu again. Which. You know, at last we saw him. He was he had fallen out of a window in Coruscant, which pretty sure pretty high up. So I don't know how that works out even for Jedi. But I mean, this could go from this. I mean, obviously, if it does happen, because there's nothing written that saying it would. But he was basically talking to Colbert and saying that yeah, he would do it. I guess.
Sure. He could have landed on a bypass on a oncoming car, you know,
space car. Yeah, that's true. He could have landed on a speeder. Yeah. Which hell that has happened because hell I think that happened in the prequels a couple of times. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So we'll see if it happens. It happens. If it don't. But at this point, I don't know. Like with Rise of Skywalker come back, he's to come back. He's yeah, I've been gone for a while, but I hid out during Order 66 and blah 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 blah. I can't imagine what that would even entail. Regardless, it doesn't matter because, like I said, it was just him in an interview saying he'd do it again if it was offered. I guess.
Alrighty.
Sam Jackson also, I think he hosted an E3 thing and that I never got to see, but you know, whatever. Next up.
Last but not least in cinematic news, Peter and good old Ned have hit the science fair in an Audi ad. What was that? Did you sneeze?
Oh, no. Just keep going. That's okay. Allergies. Yeah.
Hit the science fair in an Audi ad for the upcoming Spider-Man Far From Home, which is coming out rather soon.
Yes, I keep forgetting whether the fact that I have got my tickets or not, but I actually did. So, usually, you know, get the tickets, it's not that far away, which is granted. Nah, it's only what a couple of weeks. So, it's only about 3 weeks, 2 weeks.
Oh, no. 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Yes, 2 weeks. So, but those tickets have been out for a minute. So, yeah, Audi ad, which I haven't watched the ad. Have you?
I haven't, but I also overheard the start of a Spider-Man Far From Home ad that I avoided like the plague. I literally put my hands over my ears.
Oh, was because
it sounded very spoilery.
The recent one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the most recent one sounded very spoilery, so I'm trying to stay away from these now.
Yeah, I think I might have I neglected to watch that one also. So but anyway, yeah, there they are in an ad, you know, Peter and Gonky. So next we are going to go into, where's that accent? Next we're going to go into the comic book news. But first, I would like to call attention to a couple of things in the clickbait section, blah, 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 and one of them, which is the 24 weirdest Marvel merchandise items ever released.
Okay.
Yes. So that one of them is the Spider-Man album. We're talking music album, and you just, you know.
Oh, listen, they had a Spider-Man musical.
Right. Well,
that wasn't based on much of Marvel, but was based on the Sony stories.
Right. They kind of alluded to that with this album. And we're talking album not unlike the one that was mentioned in Spider-Verse, but actually, it wasn't a Christmas album, but it was a rock album from back in the 70s, and I don't think I had it. Life-size Hulk bolster statue that cost $21,000. What? There are no images in the store, and I don't know why. It's either something with GameSpot, or maybe I got something locked down. I don't know. But the Avengers waffle maker, which I kind of would actually like, personally.
A waffle? There's a Captain America waffle maker.
Yeah.
That I've always kind of joked with I've joked about getting.
And you sure? You know what? With you, I would not be surprised by that. Sure, in the shape of the shield, and yeah.
Sure.
Uh-huh. I see that. Or maybe there's one for Black Panther. I don't know. But regardless, So you know, Wolverine beard comb, etc., etc. There's a bunch of stuff. You can go check that out. Thor dumbbell alarm clock. Again, I don't see any. There's no images on this, but it might be my thing.
Yeah, it's probably just a matter of loading.
Yeah, X-Men cologne, folks.
Wow.
Yes. Some of the stuff I remember, some of the stuff. Spider-Man bedsheet, I do remember that because I wanted some so bad. I did. Totally did.
Yeah, I never had Spider-Man bedsheets. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, neither did I. Anyway, so there's that first clickbait. And also, every classic Disney element in the reboot introduces into canon. So there's basically a list of stuff that is now into the DuckTales canon. That the reboot is putting in, including some stuff that came out that was from like Darkwing Duck, including Darkwing Duck probably, and a couple of other Disney elements, like the gummy bears. So, go figure. But anyway, that's another article. You can check that out. Now we're getting into the news. Was this the real reason DC and Bendis changed Superboy's age? So there's a thing called, I want to say it's called SARS, soap opera rapid agent syndrome, that apparently happened in the book, which I think we may have talked about in the past.
Right.
But apparently there was some method to the madness, possibly.
Possibly.
Or at least that's what this story is speculating, as this is was built up to something, according to Newsarama. So. I don't know. I don't even think that Super Sons thing wrapped up yet. I want to say it's like a list you, because that's been going on for a minute, and that's like issue 11 at this point, and I think it's a 12-issue maxi series.
Not sure.
Yeah, but regardless, I think
it is still going on.
Yeah. That being said, like I said, he's still tween-aged as opposed to up-aged, because I think... Oh yeah. So yeah. Also, so basically, to get to the point of the story, the agent could be possibly alluding to the fact that the Legion of Superheroes that is going to be reintroduced in August's Superman issue is possibly why John got aged up, according to this article. I don't know. We'll see how that pans out with Bendis, who you never really know. Speaking of Bendis.
Bendis clears up the Young Justice cancellation concerns. So apparently, after DC recently released its September 2019 solicitations, fans saw that Young Justice was missing from the solicitations, which is never a great sign.
Right.
But apparently, it was just an absence that was due to an error in paperwork, and that's it.
Sure, Bendis. Sure. No, I'm just kidding. I'm hoping it's actually Young Justice has actually been all right so far. Like, it hit 6, and like I figure if they're gonna cancel it, at least let it hit 12. Especially with Bendis writing it, and it's his imprint. You know, that'd be this would be, if that was the case, it would be the first one of his imprint to go down to be on the block. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and like I said, it's been a pretty decent book. So, well, I guess we'll see if that was actually the case or not. Scott Snyder explains how Batman Who Laughs leads into Batman Superman, which we know is going to be relaunched. This is June 12th penultimate. Batman Who Laughs sets the stage for the series finale coming out July 31st. So now so basically this is an interview with Snyder saying, hey, this what could be what going from that book to this one, which you were reading this, weren't you?
I'm still reading it.
Right. And
I'm still reading it. It's been a frustrating read because
which is why I mentioned that. Yeah.
It's just this really long scheme by the Batman Who Laughs, and it's just annoying.
Kind of a
slog. Not quite over.
Right. So, I don't know. We'll see.
But I guess it's about to end?
Sounds like, yeah. Yeah. Last issue coming up in the end of July. And then it's going to go into Batman Superman, which starts in August, I think. I don't remember. But regardless, that's the thing, sure. I don't see how necessary the book was, anyway, but I wasn't reading it.
Mm-hmm.
DC minting new Legion
flight. I was about to say, speaking of merchandise.
Right. The DC minting new Legion flight rings in advance of Legion of Superheroes Return, which this article probably could have been better placed, but whatever. So, yeah. Bendis is writing Legion of Superheroes, and we already know that's coming back out. We just mentioned it also again. So it says, I guess Ben just tweeted out the fact that you know we're getting new Legion of Superhero rings too, right? Already designed and in production in response to a fan question. Would have not teased this hard unless we're bringing back all the thunder, according to Bendis.
Mm.
So, sure.
I mean, DC in the 90s started putting out, you know, these giveaway plastic replica rings of mm-hmm. Green Lantern. They started with the OG Green Lantern ring, and then they moved to the Kyle Rayner ring.
Right, when they started doing the other colors.
Right, and then they did, but then they moved to the other colors.
Right, well, I'm saying, but like it came across when they did the whole, like,
right, the whole spectrum, right?
Right.
But I'm talking about like when they first started, they did the original Green Lantern ring and the Kyle Rayner ring, and then when the Spectrum Lantern Corps came, Varys Corps came out, they put those out. But they also did a Legion ring.
Sure.
You know, it was just a free giveaway, so I'm assuming that this is something that's a little bit more substantial, maybe metallic, because apparently there might be some price information attached to this.
Right. Sure. I mean, how many? I actually don't want to know the answer to this, but how many Legion of Superheroes fans are there out there like that?
There's plenty.
I'm sure, but
there's plenty. A lot of those, some of those books sell. So
yeah, no, I don't doubt it. Yeah, but I don't know. That's just never been one that. Granted, I'm not a big DC head either way, so it doesn't. It's irrelevant. But like, decent Legion of, as groups go in the DC universe, Legion of Superheroes not been a big one for me.
Understood.
But anyway, next up.
I mean, speaking of people who may want something. You can own a life-size Batman the Animated Series Harley Quinn statue designed by Bruce Timm, which is going to be in stores in December. This is life-sized, and it retails for $5,200.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, there is already a very smaller, much smaller version of this particular figure, or at least a similar one of this figure, that is out on the market through, I can't remember who it's through. Regardless, hey, look, I don't know about a life-size version, but I wouldn't mind having this as a smaller, because I think that one went for a fairly decent penny. Not this much, obviously, but, you know, there are Harley Quinn fans out there, that's all I'm going to say, and I'm sure there are enough Harley Quinn fans that know enough about her to know about her, you know, from the animated series and would want this. Man, I'm not going to sit here and say that I wouldn't, but no. Not like this, anyway. Definitely not like this. I got no kind of room. Even if I did. But that's the thing. If you want it and you got the money for it, send me that money. I'll make sure it gets to good use. That's all I got to say about that. Next up, a new Avengers game hints at a Marvel gaming universe, which we kind of figured with the Spider-Man game. That's me editorializing about it. So, and we also know that Marvel games, since the Spider-Man game came out, they've been focusing on original stories in a universe that might actually turn out to be in their own universe, because we already know the Spider-Man one is in a universe where they're even saying that this Avengers game could quite possibly end universe with that Spider-Man game. So that is what this is basically hinting at also.
Okay.
Which, given about some of the stuff they've said about this, it kind of makes sense, because, you know, sure, it's not outside the realm of Marvel to make a universe out of, you know, a specific section of a property.
Right.
Or it's even cross properties.
I was going to say, it's interesting that they would put the Avengers in San Francisco in that reality.
Well, this version anyway, you're right.
Right, that's what I mean. It's interesting.
Yes. Because you would expect them, like, well, if you think under West Coast office, you would think the ones we know from the Wackos.
Right.
But I understand at the same time, like, well, the only one that people generally know cinematically is Hawkeye, and, you know, they haven't really established that cinematically yet, anywho, or
if exactly. They're going to. I mean, they basically, you know, move the Avengers out to the West Coast in the game.
Right.
And even in the cinematic universe, they're East Coast based, so. But, yep. Anyway.
And I suppose there's going to be, I think I don't know if I don't know if you saw the gameplay video of that, and I'm not sure some of that might have been explained in that, but I don't think so. I might be wrong about that. Regardless, we'll see how that works out, but I am looking forward to this game.
Alrighty.
Criticisms aside. That's you?
Next up, yep, this is me. Captain Marvel goes neon in a new Funko Pop figure, so this is based on the one moment in the Captain Marvel movie in which
seconds that this
Monica, little up. Monica Rambeau,
yes.
Young 90s age Monica Rambeau is adjusting Carol's Kree suit to find new colors, and, you know, cycles through a couple of options, and one of them is like a day-glow neon.
Right, yes, and young Monica, not Monica, if you know the actually comic version of that character. Because they basically made that off of the little girl that was originally in the Kelly Sue DeConnick's run, who was not Monica Rambeau, obviously.
Right.
So, and I only mention that because since the movie came out, there's been something about that showing up. But regardless, yeah, the suit that showed up for like 10 seconds is now a Funko Pop. Because that's what they do. Wait, what is this about? Oh, I'm about to say I thought I saw something about Richard Pryor. Next up, speaking of Captain Marvel, Captain Marvel team joins Fearless number one, which is weirdly giving me a flashback of Fear itself for some reason, and I have not even read it. Which we're already getting that with War of the Realms, but regardless. So Captain Marvel's writer Kelly Thompson and artist Carmen Carino have been added to the all-female Fearless anthology due July 24th. It is a three-issue... it is a three-issue series. And basically, it says here, the Fearless is Lady of the Marvel Universe, off and on and off the page. And I guess this is... I feel like they did something similar to this. Not necessarily A-Force, because yes, I know that's the thing. But I remember there being a series, and I think it had, like, Sue Storm, and I want to say Carol was in it, and, like, Nova, Frankie Ray, Nova, and a few other ladies in Marvel kind of all teamed up together for a series, and I can't remember the name of it right now, but I feel like this sounds similar to that, but I don't know if that's actually the case. But it basically almost sounds like what this the recent one, the three-issue one-shots that they've been doing that kind of have a through line.
Yeah.
So, and apparently Millie the Model Holmes shows up in this also, so take with that what you will with this.
Really?
Yeah. If you want that little bit of flashback. But yeah, Captain Marvel takes the world by storm. Speaking of the weather storm, of the X-Men faces a problem only a goddess could solve, and add the Invisible Woman and you've got an unstoppable trio in a story by Hugo nominated novelist and Spider-Gwen, Spider-Ghost writer Shannon McGuire, which I believe you've been up on and enjoying.
Yes.
And I think the one thing I've read by her was actually pretty good. I'd read this.
Cool.
And again, that is coming out in July 24th. We'll look out for that. Next up.
Marvel has announced a one-shot comic from Bill Sienkiewicz and Chris Claremont entitled New Mutants, War Children. It's due out on September 18th. Not sure what the story is about, but it's about the New Mutants.
Right. For those who don't know, in this article kind of mentions that the New Mutants were introduced in a graphic novel by Claremont and Bob McCloud back in 82 before getting their own series. I remember that. So yeah, it looks like it's the classic team for this. Now, whether they are going to be the current versions, which some of them aren't around this year, or more than likely, it says they'll be joined by later recruits Doug Ramsey, Cypher, and Yon Ramvusu. So clearly it is the definitely teen versions of the classic crew.
All right.
So look forward to that September 18th. For all you New Mutant fans, I kind of dig them. Anyway, Wolverine, Moon Knight, and Ghost Spider get wrapped up in Acts of Evil this September. So this is the event thing that's not a big event, because clearly Marvel don't want you to misconstrue the fact that they only have one big event every 16 years, but a whole bunch of little events that kind of, you know, misrepresent that.
Part of the 80th, too.
That is also correct, but this is the one that is going across all the annuals that they're putting out. So, and yes, this is also shades of Acts of Vengeance, that classic event from back in the day. Obviously, this is probably a sequel-ish type situation. They even got the font on the Moon Knight cover. So it is clearly, we've already seen the banner for it. So clearly, it is going back, because nothing new under the sun. Regardless, you know, we got the Ghost Spider, Moon Knight, and Wolverine. Moon Knight doesn't even have a book right now. We should point that out. But yet he's got an annual. In fact, did he get an annual when his book was even out? I don't remember. But then again, we've had annuals for books that is either, you know, just started one issue or, you know, whatever. So it's weird. It's a weird thing we're under. But we also got the creative team for these books, so no use to go on with all that. Good stuff. Next.
This September, Black Panther and the Agents of Wakanda unite in a new ongoing series written by Jim Zub with art by Lan Medina. So Agents of Wakanda is a concept that's been introduced in the pages of Avengers in the wake of the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D. T'Challa has created a new kind of spy service that reaches around the world in support of the Avengers.
All I'm going to say is it probably won't last that long, and two, it'll probably last longer than Black Panther and the crew, which I am still upset about.
Oh, no.
That's all I'm going to say. And Jim Zub's writing this, who's writing Champions right now. He's been doing all right.
Cool.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I wasn't sure how to feel about this, because basically for what I said just now.
Mm-hmm.
Next up,
you can combine all three of the next ones.
Yeah. So basically, there on Marvel on Twitter was putting out little teaser images. Let's see if this article actually has. Yes, it basically started with the three in webs, denoting a Spider-Man based thing going by. Please get ready for this the appropriate sound effect, by the way.
Okay.
So counting down to one, So it went 3, then 2, then 1, and then on day one, Sabowski jokes about one more day, which that's a hurt thing to do, because one more day was not, I mean, there are a section, I'd say a good section of fans who didn't like one more day for reasons. Or was it one new day? It was brand new day. It was one or two. Regardless, it doesn't matter. But it all ended up with theories being thrown around and CB Sabowski debunking all that. But it all came down to the fact that we got a new Spider-Man story coming out by one J.J. Abrams and his son, who are going to write a Spider-Man comic.
All right. So is it now the time for the sound effect?
Yes. Yes, all that build up, and this is what we get. I haven't heard too much hubbub about it, but it was just like, really? And I know, I think like William Bruce Less was out there, was like, yeah, this is going to go over real great, because, you know, giving something like this to a director where it is not their, you know, and primary focus always goes well. I think I'm paraphrasing what he said because I can't remember right off the bat. And
is
I'm
it
like,
referencing Kevin Smith?
I'm not sure if it was actually. Well, I mean, considering Kevin Smith has had runs of Green Arrow and whatnot, I don't know, but I know. Actually, he could have been also talking about that. Can you remember that one DC book that didn't go because of the
Batman, the Widening Gyre?
Well, there's that too. But the
he did like a small run of Daredevil.
Right.
He did Green Arrow, but then there's just Batman books that went nowhere.
Right. But this also could be that that book that was supposed the DC history book that was supposed to happen that was from Lee Daniels, I believe, or whoever it was supposed to do a book, and that just went nowhere because it didn't happen. But regardless, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to say again, if you want to get into the comic book industry, be a famous director and pull your son along with it.
That's just another of the various ways to become a comic book writer.
Yeah, and not actually being a comic book writer, but that's a whole nother situation.
Right.
You know. So I'm like, boo. So yeah, J.J. Abrams, his son, who's apparently 20. Actually, his son looks younger than that. I don't know why, but just definitely looks like him. So yeah, it's going to be a new Spider-Man story. Sarah Petrelli is doing the art, so you need to know the art's going to be great. I mean, it's always probably going to be good. I mean, J.J. has written, I've had a lot of movies, so it's not like whatever, but this is, man, whatever. And apparently a Spider-Man and MJ focused book, as you can see by the cover here, and a new villain, Cadaverous, which is probably going to get folded into the continuity, because that's how they do. Obviously, CB Sabowski was surprised, was happy about this, which kills the priest. Boo, I say. Boo that man! Actually, no, I'm just not plucked about it.
I'm just disappointed they built this up to be.
Yes, exactly. That's basically
not a big deal.
I'm like, this is whatever. One, whatever. Moving right along.
Next up, Erica Larson and Mark Bagley and Jerry Conway are going big in their return to Spider-Man. So these classic creators are returning for a one-shot entitled Spider-Man Going Big this September.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, actually, why does the art is giving me shades of, first of all, his pinky finger is either just got blasted and withstood it, or is doing the side blast.
Perspective.
But, yes, perspective. I know. Josh. But it actually is giving me shades of Electric Company Spider-Man.
No.
Again, you have to be of a certain vintage to know that. You can look that up on YouTube,
right.
And I encourage you to do so. So yeah, that's the thing. It's coming this September, and I guess this was part of there were some people speculating that this was a part of the countdown, which we have just talked about, which probably would have been slightly better than what we got. Nevertheless, next up, is this me? Captain America brings back. This is you because I did the rest of those. I did all of those.
What's that?
I said I did all of those, so this is you.
okay. I mean, I just did the last one. It's fine. Okay. Captain America brings back.
It's okay. Just go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, like, I'll do it. That's fine. Captain America brings back a Secret Empire villain with a twist. So this happens in the last issue. And, you know, the twist is something that I chose not to mention because it's a silly concept.
Okay.
But it was the AmeriCorps.
Yeah, I hated them when they showed up in... in Sam's book.
So, I you know, I was just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what the twist is. I can't
imagine. That they're robots. They're not people inside.
Wait, I thought they were already, though. At least some of them were already, though.
I don't remember, like, the original incarnation, so.
I feel like they started out as actual, but then they quickly went into, like, robots.
Mm-hmm.
Especially during the some part of Sam's run. I could be possibly wrong about that, but I think they ended up being robots. It doesn't matter because it's stupid. Marvel's Star Wars begins with a new era with issue 68. We've kind of sort of talked about it when I talked about issue 67 that came out this week, so really there's no need to go into it. Because I pretty much said who's writing it and where they're going with it. Next?
Snoke. I thought he was dead. Kylo Ren, Rey, and Rose are going to star in Marvel's Age of Resistance.
And you failed to realize that means nothing with these books.
What's that?
I said you failed to realize that that means nothing with these Age of Resistance books.
Right.
So, yeah, more than likely, just like the end of these other ones, it'll be a tale that probably doesn't mean a darn thing that has to do with... Now, Rose, actually, we don't know that much about Rose outside of, you know, her turn in Last Jedi. That one would probably be one that could give some meat.
Right, because at the end of the day, these are all canon. So these all will be filling in a lot of the backstory on some of these characters
I can guarantee you won't
be.
I can guarantee you won't be a lot because I've been reading these Age of Resistance books. And a lot of them don't really fill in that much. There's some stuff in them, mind you. It's like, hey, if you wanted to know about where, you know, how Leia got her bounty hunter suit, there's one on that. Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, largely a lot of them, and granted, you know, there's been, you know, Pac's been doing a lot of these, so they've been all right, but they just really not that much meat to them, personally. You know, they're like little stories that's like, okay, yeah, sure, that happened. Nothing doesn't seem significant, at least right now. So, yeah, maybe these will be different. Like I said, maybe the Rose one will have a little bit more meat to it because we don't
know. Something to fill in the wiki page.
Right. Well, that's absolutely going to happen. But, you know, hopefully there's going to be some meat to their story. So, yeah, the Snoke one's going to be... Tom Taylor is actually writing all of these with different artists. So, because I know, like I said, Greg Pak had done a stint on these... but I guess since he's starting to do the main Star Wars book now, I guess he doesn't have time to do these anymore. So, I guess the Rey one also could have some meat to it. But again, we've seen a good bit of, like, there's been novels about Rey. Like, there's definitely a novel with some significant backstory. Obviously, she could use it a little bit more, so it doesn't really matter. But I don't trust these one shots to give her that much more. So yeah, that's the thing. They're happening. Next up, Kirkman's Super Dinosaur stomps to SDCC as exclusive action figure set. So apparently in the let's copy Moon Boy or Girl in Devil Dinosaur. Let me stop. That's not right. I shouldn't say that. That's not nice. But anyway, Robert Kirkman and Jason Howard's Super Dinosaur is stomping over to San Diego Comic-Con. The figure set consists of Super Dinosaur's two main characters, Derek Dynamo and his T-Rex best friend, Super Dinosaur. Catchy name. As part of a limited run, only 500 Super Dinosaur figure sets exist. And each one will have a hollow foil sticker that lists the number in the series from 1 to 500. They will retail for $50 a pop. At Skybound's booth. I'm assuming this is a book that's out or coming out? Have we heard of this?
Or you got me?
Yeah, I don't know what this is from. I'm sure someone will pipe up. Anyway, next up.
Hasbro's My Little Pony Comic Con exclusive is a reminder that time changes all of us. What it is a two-pack celebration of the franchise's evolution. From the classic style My Little Pony to the new art style championed by Friendship is Magic. So it shows us how far the designs for the My Little Pony toys have come.
Yes, Bronies Unite.
The characters.
Bronies Unite, I guess. I don't know. Is that still a thing? Who knows? Regardless.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Although it was as recently as last Comic-Con, like a year ago, like a little less than a year ago, it was, so.
Right. Rip Peter Allen Fields, one of the minds behind one of Star Trek Next Generation's most powerful episodes. Sorry, I'm just reading that off the page. I'll go back to that.
Okay.
Sure. Hasbro wants you to choose the next War for Cybertron figure. So basically, this is another set of Transformers figures come from the War for Cybertron, which is a video game, a couple of video games actually. Well, there was one game, but there was another one that was around it. That's in that same vein. So these are figures that come from that, which is basically them in Cybertron, according to the game anyway, in that era. So it's not like the trucks and things we know of, the earthly vehicles that we know of. And I don't even think these are transforming figures. These are just the regular like model figures or whatever the case may be. But basically, the Transformers Facebook page reveals their first teaser image featuring four hidden Decepticons on June 12th, which is long since passed. The next day, those Decepticons were revealed to be Gnaw, Runamuck, Needlenose, and Shrapnel. One of which I know is a Insecticon. The rest of
Shrapnel, right?
Yes. The rest of them, I'm not sure about, but I think those might have been ones they ginned up for the game, if I remember correctly. But yeah, I think they were doing a vote when this article initially came out, to vote on those Decepticon figures that they were going to put in, and that is. Been decided. Next.
I'm sorry. I just read something that made me laugh.
Well, what happened?
It was just something I saw. My tablet went on sleep, and when I turned it on, it went to a Facebook post of a group, and I just it was pretty good. It's funny.
Gotcha. Okay.
Next up. Transform roll out with a new Transformers crossed with Ghostbusters figure. It's actually Optimus. What's that?
Go on.
What's that you were saying?
Go on.
Not sure what Roddy Cat is
trying to
imply, laying out some subliminal messaging in the show.
No, there's nothing subliminal at all. Just go ahead and I'll get to it.
That's funny. So it's Optimus painted in the Ecto-1 colors, and there's a Slimer included with the roller and whatchamacallit and the platform,
the trailer.
Thank you.
Yeah, this thing is $150.
Yeah, it's $150. Those masterpiece things aren't cheap.
Well, that is you're right, and I mentioned that, but yes, and those masterpiece figures have gotten, they've recently gotten to be that much, because a lot of those figures weren't that much, but they were pricey.
The Optimus ones are almost always over $100.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, but all of those, but they've been raising the price of all those masterpiece ones, as I've noticed recently, and this has been a trend for at least going on this year. It's ridiculous. I wanted this thing. The reason why I was sighing is because I wanted this so badly. I really wanted. And I showed this. And we showed this to. Well, I put this in our back channel, and Dirt was like, "What?" Like $150 for this thing is freaking ridiculous. Now, yeah, they didn't go to the left to do it to go full Ecto 1 on it, but still, you know, as Agent 70 said, you know, those Optimus Prime ones kind of go like the one from last year, which was the skate one. Mm-hmm. That I really wanted that I never did get, which was half the price. That went really quickly because I think a friend of the show, Matt Wang, was going to try to see about it for us and couldn't because they sold out of them things.
Yeah. I would just add that I think the very first, I had an opportunity to buy the very first one. Mm-hmm. The masterpiece. Optimus and you know I gave it some serious thought and it was already over $100. So it was like 120, I think.
And that one that I wanted, I saw it on Amazon and it was kind of about that much. I'm like, and at the time I actually had the money for it, but I'm like, no, I can't do that. I can't in good conscience do that.
And what's funny is that at the time I was just like, I can do this, but what am I? You know, it's just gonna. You know, it's going to be like the lone Transformer that's in my closet. You know, it just felt weird.
Yeah, once you start, you can't stop. Well, you probably can, but I don't know. I feel like there will be a sound wave in your future, or a couple of others, maybe a couple of the Jets or something, whatever you.
What I was going to add is that's the reason why I don't get those the little SH monster figure arts, the Godzilla ones,
right.
Those are expensive, and those got to be addicting because, like, you can create, like, entire dioramas with them.
Right, and you already do that with Marvel Legends.
Exactly, exactly.
So. Although, think about it. Wait, do you have any Transformers? I mean, do you have any G.I. Joe? I'm sorry, that's what I meant.
Oh, G.I. Joe? Like, old ones? Yeah, yes, I
still got or some any. Old. See there, you could do a G.I. Joe versus Transformer diorama.
That's so funny.
Think about it.
That's funny.
Well, I think, didn't they do a Transformers, like Avengers? I think they did, actually. Regardless, you know what? We're going to roll past this because I know that's some.
Well, just imagine if you had a black costume spider and you could create the cover to Transformers number
2. Yes! Yes!
With Megatron. Exactly. If you got a masterpiece Megatron.
Exactly!
That would be funny.
I mean, I guess you at this point you could use Miles, but I mean, you know.
No, but to recreate that cover.
But that's what I'm saying. But you could use a mouse suit for that. Well, I guess is there a black suit?
They do. They've already made a bunch of them.
Right, right, right. So, yeah, you could very much do that.
Absolutely.
But that, exactly. But the Megatron they got out now is probably a tank and not a gun anyway.
No, I think they did a masterpiece of Megatron that had a faithful rendition.
I know they did, but is that one still out is what I'm saying.
Oh, no, that would be harder to obtain.
Right. Because I know it
would be harder to obtain.
Yeah, and I know they reissued some of those ones because I think that's how I got my Soundwave.
Gotcha.
No, actually, I got my Soundwave before they reissued that one because they reissued that one and bumped up the price. It was crazy. Anyway, you know what? Let's get on because it's making me upset. speaking of G.I. Joe, new G.I. Joe series launches despite Cobra's victory. So when we last, I remember this vaguely, when we last left the G.I. Joe series, I believe that was the Aubrey Citizen one. And they were kind of rebooting that, or they were kind of going through volumes of that one. Cobra had won.
Okay.
And I believe this next one is going to... Is it gonna ignore that? No. So basically they're doing G.I. Joe Renegades. I hope that's not the case, because I hated that show.
Really?
Kinda. So basically, let's see. Loyal citizens of Cobra take heed, blah, 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 blah. Inspired by fugitives, including Duke, Scarlet, Paul Allure, and Chris Evenhuse, seek to poison the hearts and minds of and all souls of our populace. So they wrote this press release like it was from Cobra Commander, sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good bit. I like it. Brainwashing individuals into committing acts of espionage and sabotage. So basically, it kind of is G.I. Joe Renegades, if you know that old show.
I was going to say, it actually sounds like there's an old episode of the very first G.I. Joe cartoon where
they went to the alternate universe. Where they went into the alternate universe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Where they actually did a little bit of sci-fi dimension travel.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure this is probably playing off of that too. But yeah. But you know, there was an animated series called Renegades where basically G.I. Joe was on the run and it was like Ripcord and a bunch of other people, like six other people or something, or five other people.
Gotcha.
But this is like, yeah, this is like, this is, so Duke, and as I remember from that last couple of series, like, Scarlet was pretty much running the show, and Duke was off doing his own thing on the side. Like, I think he went back to the army, like, the army proper, and he was working for the government that way. And I don't know, it was a whole lot that happened during the course of that stuff. I remember there was some actually good stuff that could have gone somewhere, but none of them did, because it was like was it Jesse Kane? Somebody, I can't remember. Like, Arbor Citizen was the last one, and then it was somebody before that series, and they basically just kind of kept restarting it, and, you know, wasn't sure what they were trying to do with it, or had no faith in. I don't know what IDW was doing with those things, but apparently this is taken up from that, or, you know, because of that, I guess. Because even then, I don't think we saw where Cobra had taken out the whole place. They had just pretty much won, and they were kind of like, they were basically a respectable business, but G.I. Joe was kind of, you know, seen up for what they were, but also getting. But also got outed as being a covert operations, so they got put publicly brought out, and then Scarlet's team had to kind of go underground, and Duke was kind of still out there looking at doing his thing. He had quit to Joseph. Like I said, there's a whole lot that happened during that whole thing. It was some pretty decent stuff.
All right. Just to add, not an advertisement or anything, but Big Bad Toy Store has the masterpiece Megatron that's molded like the cartoon. Not like the original toy.
Sure.
But molded like the cartoon for $239.
See? Oh my God. What is, oh jeez.
It's because it's not brand new anymore.
But still, that is ridiculously priced, but they know people will pay it.
Good. Yeah.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Anyway, I got my sound.
Because it's the big size, it's the big scale. That's
right.
The thing.
Huh? Right.
It's the like any of the smaller scale ones are all less than 100, like Wheeljack, even yeah. Shockwave is only 100.
Right, but that was still, yeah, but I think when I got mine, it was a little bit cheaper than that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of them are like 60, 70 bucks, which is still pricey, but not as bad as, like I said, what they're starting to get to now with those things. So, and yeah, I still kind of want a couple of them, but like I said, I got a Prime and I got a Soundwave, so I'm fairly good until things change.
$160 for Hound. Oh
yeah, see, I told you that was, yeah, it's ridiculous. I think there's a Windblade I want, but I don't think there's a masterpiece for her. And they brought out like a leader. It's ridiculous what they just bumped up those things. Anyway, enough about that.
I'm like, oh.
But hey, go ahead and get you a couple of them. You know, that's what I'm saying.
Actually, no, that was expensive because it had like a coin exclusive.
Have always been kind of expensive also. So yeah.
So I don't know if there's a cheaper one without a coin. It's not that much
different. Let me rephrase that. They weren't that much different without the coin. It was probably a good $20, $30 maybe. I might be wrong about that, but they were a little bit cheaper. Not that by much though.
I gotcha. All right.
From what I remember. But they still like bumped the price on all of them regardless.
All right. It's my turn, right?
No. Dark Horse's Burger Books announces new big box horror series Everything. So, since the launch of Burger Books imprint from Dark Horse Comics a few years back, the Karen Burger curated line has published stories of alien invasions, government conspiracies, and gender swap Dickens reimaginings. While most of the imprint's offerings have been miniseries, Invisible Kingdom, the sci-fi series from writer G. Willow Wilson and artist Kristen Ward, so two dope names put together, was Burger Books' first ongoing series. I feel like I saw a tweet out there from G. Willow Wilson, because I think somebody said that, hey, Invisible Kingdom would make, or one of the books would make a good Netflix series, and she was like, yes, my phone is charged and ready. That was G. Willow Wilson saying that, which I thought was cool. But yeah, the imprint is now adding a second ongoing series in the form of Everything, a new horror series written by Christopher Cantwell, writer of another Burger Books miniseries, She Can Fly, and artist I.N.J. Colbard will provide the visuals for the series. Then it just goes into the the Went Fours. So,
okay.
I want to say it sounds like a Stranger Thing, but I am not the one who talks about that. But it basically sounds like what was that show? Not Gary, Indiana. Do you remember that show? Erie, Indiana. Thank you. I think it sounds like that kind of a situation. Could be wrong. Anyway, next up.
Next up, Todd McFarlane knows how, but not when, Spawn's going to end. So back in 1992, we all remember this, unfortunately, those of a certain vintage. Todd McFarlane introduced Spawn and Al Simmons, his alter ego, and apparently... in a recent interview with Ted Adams, co-founder and CEO of IDW Publishing, in that interview, McFarlane talked about he has a vision for it, and even though it's well past 300 issues, there's more stories to come, and he allegedly has another 300 in his head.
I bet he does.
And you know what's funny? Oh, go ahead.
If you were going to go to the same place I was going to go, I was going to say, in other news, Spawn is still going.
Yes. What I was going to add is, strangely enough, a lot of the Spawn issues are somewhat valuable because they have tremendously low print runs. They do not make a lot of them.
That's not necessarily artificial scarcity, but it makes sense.
Because not that many people order them.
Exactly. What's the market for Spawn books these days?
Right.
So, I mean... good for that's a long ass run. I imagine there has been some breaks in between it because I think he stopped and kind of started back up at some point. I feel like,
he hasn't done art on it in a long time, he's just been writing it,
right? What I'm saying, but I feel like there was a break from him just doing it, period, and then they just brought it back out and kept the number.
You might be right. Yeah, they just continued the series, they never tried to reboot it or anything. Yeah, I think, you know, he's contributed art here and there, and he inks a lot of stuff nowadays.
Sure. I mean, busy running a toy company. Actually, I don't know if that's any truth to that. But,
surprisingly enough, McFarlane Toys still chugging.
Yep, true that also. Yeah, they've actually got some deals.
Well, they picked up a couple of important licenses along the way, which really kept them going, like The Walking Dead.
Right. So, yeah, so that's... I guess it shouldn't be that big of a surprise, but so it's, and then the article goes on to say that, yeah, there's been some spinoffs, including someone we know. Let's see, there's a 3-issue Violator series, Angela. That's not the same. Sam and Twitch. That's not the same. No.
Angela's a Marvel character.
I know. Well, now it is, but. I was thinking wrong anyway, because I don't think this Angela is not the same Angela, because that was Neil Gaiman's Angela. So I'm thinking two different things. Regardless, hey, that's the thing. Spawn's still around. Go. Sure.
Alrighty.
Next.
Last but not least.
Yes. Pandemica is IDW's next sci-fi epic from Jonathan Mayberry. On Wednesday, IDW announced its latest series, a dark action series called Pandemica. It's penned by New York Times bestselling author Jonathan Mayberry, Marvel Universe versus The Punisher, and V-Wars. I'm not sure if that's where I know that name from, but regardless, it doesn't really... And he has a grand plan for the series. His story of defiance against authoritarian regimes is a warning about cultural intolerance. Pandemica reflects a lot of fears about the direction in which our country and world is going. So potentially some rip from the headline stuff.
Okay.
Or some art imitating light. That is me editorializing. It deals with a diverse group of people who discover that a secret organization is selling designer pathogens for use in ethnic cleansing. My story is about the kinds of people who take a stand against this, who find the courage to fight back, who put themselves in harm's way to protect the innocent, quote unquote, from the author. Doing art on this is Alex Sanchez, Star Wars of the Old Republic, and colorist Jay Photos from Lock and Key.
Alrighty.
And this comes out in September. And that, folks, is the news. Hit me up with a new ad, with an ad, please, sir.
All righty. Last ad of the night is for Blue Apron's meal delivery service. Blue Apron, fresh ingredients and incredible recipes delivered weekly to your door. Skip the grocery store and make incredible meals at home with Blue Apron, always shipped free right to your home. And now the listeners of the Comic Book Chronicles can get $30 off your first Blue Apron order. To place your first order with $30 off and to help keep our show free for you, go to our network website at cspn.us. That's cspn.us. Then click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down to the Blue Apron link and sign up for your first order. Blue Apron through cspn.us. Do it today.
I almost would want to try this, except I know I have a person that lives in this house would be like, why in the hell would you want to do that? probably with those exact words. So it doesn't, you know, but we have come to the end of another fine Comic Book Chronicles show. Thank you each and every one of you for listening and or watching us record live, which we do every Thursday night, barring movie protocol, at 9-ish, probably more likely 9:30-ish p.m. Thursday nights, as I've said. And you can find us, your hosts. My name is Ruddicat. You can find me at Ruddicat on Twitter and Instagram. And also, News Nerds Need Twitter. News Nerds Need...
Oh,
that's okay. You're good. News Nerds Need Reddit and CB Caps Instagram. 8-70 on Instagram and the Twitters. You don't have a site coming up or anything? Or
what? Not right now.
I don't know. We should, I bet so both of us probably should end up doing some more writing or whatever, but that's a whole other conversation for another time. Yep. PCN underscore dirt on Twitter, Pop Culture Net on Twitter, popculturenetwork.com, and all of the umbrella sites therein. Tim DOGG98, the Osiris of this ish. You can find him at that on Twitter. The Click Nation and the Click Nation. The Click Nation on Twitter and the Click Nation.com. That is DKLIQNATION. CB Cron on Twitter. And of course, Comic Book Resources, where he's writing his face off. You can find this here podcast on the CSPN. That's the Cold Slither Podcast Network, CSPN.us.
Do it today.
Exactly. Where you can go and find this show and other fine shows. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Google Play and Apple iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the Cold Slither Podcast Network's SoundCloud page. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back next week because we have no movie protocol in effect for a couple of weeks. And that's actually, right. It wouldn't be in effect then either way because Far From Home is going to be starting prior to the...
It might be a holiday protocol, though.
Is that on a Thursday?
I think so.
It is. So, yes, we might be on holiday. We'll stay tuned to our individual Twitters, yes, for that bit of information, because that is also the same week that Spider-Man Far From Home, but that's going to be prior to Thursday, so that is irrelevant on that prompt, but if we do take a holiday break, we will let you guys know. And gals. And non-gender folk. So with that, folks, first of all, happy Pride Month. You know, there are LGBTQ people, not just June. And actually, also, happy Black Music Month, also, since we're in the middle of June. So, you know, a few things to celebrate and keep going through the rest of the year, because
okay. You
don't just stop just because the month is over. That being said, this has been the Comic Book Chronicles, and goodbye.
Peace. One.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mock my words.